Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast. As always, my name's Eric. I'm with my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And with us this week, we have a special guest star. You may have heard his voice on the sultry waves of the Preferred Enemies Podcast. With us tonight is Kevin Shook.
Hello. Thanks for letting me on.
Hey, thanks for being on. Privilege and an honor to have you here. So Kevin's going to join us for the whole show, and we're going to go through our fun stuff. Lots going on this past weekend. We got some Inari rumors, courtesy of Bell of Lost Souls, to go over. There was the gargantuan event over in London. Perhaps you've heard of it. Guys, what'd you think of the wedding gown?
It was long.
I loved all the drama. I came home Friday night from setting up, and there was literally a two-hour show, and they were like breaking down the bouquet, the hats. I was like, really? Somebody got paid to talk about this? This is unbelievable. But you know,
I know is we fought a war, actually a couple of wars, about 250 years ago, so I don't have to deal with this stuff.
Exactly.
So I just kind of checked out on it.
Well, now we've got one of our citizens joining the party. I'm like, what the heck?
True.
Meanwhile, the show Suits is like ratings have quadrupled, you know. So.
Yeah, exactly.
So, anyway, if you've not seen the show, it's actually fairly interesting. I have no idea what they're going to do next season. They're getting, for one of the three episodes I've seen of that show, they've gotten rid of all their main actors. So I don't know. Anyway, it's on Hulu. It's on USA. Check it out. Of course, we were talking about the London GT, a huge event over in London. Several Americans were present. We got lots to talk about that, as well as our near and dear to our hearts, the Scorched Earth Open, which officially has become Arizona's largest competitive event for 40K. So we're very excited about that. Yay. It was a great weekend.
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah. It was a great event.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, also, we'll talk a little bit more detail. It's a good lesson in terms of how to grow a community, which was the original intent of the tournament. And so it's really nice to see it all come to fruition. And of course, we'll talk to Kevin, get to know a little about him and the Preferred Enemies, as well as his gaming background. And then, of course, the ever favorite ITC Top 10 and the upcoming events in the ITC. All right, without further ado, let's talk about those Inari rumors. So I don't know if you guys saw this on Bell of Lost Souls, but the rumor is directly after the last index is updated. So it's kind of neck and neck between Space Wolves and Orcs.
Yeah, everything I've heard is that it's going to be Space Wolves will be the last codex, which kind of makes sense because if they rough approximations with the Primarchs, they've been releasing a Primarch about every 6 to 8 months. So if they keep on the current release track, the next one you'd assume would be they've released two Chaos Primarchs and Gilliman. So you'd think there'd be a Loyalist Primarch next. That would be a perfect spot for a Rust release, which I think a lot of people would be really excited about.
All except for the Dark Angel players.
Well, yeah, all except for the Dark Angel players, but but they're Chaos anyway, so.
Oh, okay, yeah, they'll be on that side of the rotation.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so yeah, it seems really neat. Like, so if you, I don't play Age of Sigmar, but I do follow the release cycles with Age of Sigmar. And I think the neatest thing about what they're doing is they're doing these combined factions of, let's take Khorne Demons and Khorne Warriors of Chaos and mix in a little bit of this and create a unique faction that plays completely different than all the factions we drew from. And Inari is really the only thing that we currently have in 40K that's like that. So I think that what comes out of that codex is going to be really interesting. Because my hope is that it comes out with a fully fleshed army that plays differently than Eldar, than Dark Eldar, or Harlequins, that can kind of open up on these possibilities for doing, you know, a combined Tau Kroot army or a Kroot Orc army or, you know, whatever other aliens they pull out. And I think it could really open up a lot of possibilities for GW.
Well, one thing I think we'll see is you hit it right on the head with the AOS where they do that kind of, we're going to kind of release two factions that are semi-coupled together. So I think the return of Slaanesh will happen in Sigmar. And so right after that, you'll see the return of new demons of Slaanesh for 40K. But I bet you'll see an Emperor's Children Fulgrim type release at the same time.
I hope so. They desperately need those models.
Fiends of Slaanesh, great unit. Crap model. I'm sorry. Those things are just bad.
I don't know that I've ever actually seen a Fiend model. Everyone I've known
they're
that runs
bad.
Them
they're really
runs
hard to get. Don ordered them. What took him 4 months to get his order filled? I mean, it was
at least
it was a bad scene. And they've always been really good. Even fifth, sixth, and seventh edition, they've always been a strong support unit that does some damage in close combat and just helps make the rest of the army stronger. The orc thing, it's interesting when you look at the Age of Sigmar. I think they're the Iron Jaws, the more armored looking. You look at those, you're like,
yes.
Okay, just make them a 40k unit and give them some, sluggas. We're good to go. And
Richard, my co-host on Preferred Enemies, runs orcs, and he's bought a bunch of those Iron Jaws to just convert up and make into Mega Knobs or War Bosses because the models are so awesome.
It seems that the new direction with orcs is to follow the Beast series, and they're going to get these gargantuan, walkers, and be curious to see what those look like when they're finally, instead of the apron style gargants and stompas, you're going to get, an actual true walker with a armored orc inside it. So curious to see where that all goes. But anyway, so they kind of all these kind of pieces coming together, but interesting. So the thought process behind this new codex that's supposed to be coming out is an Inari codex. So first of all, everybody's going like, finally, because it would hopefully clean up some of the rules and confusion and actually give them stratagems and stop leeching off of other armies and whatnot. But if you had a chance to read the Ghost Warrior book, which Ray was nice enough to lend to me. Thank you, Ray. I like that book a lot. It's basically the Inari book, Yvrain and Vizark and going after Nurgle, and then they have a mysterious foe later on. But when you read that book, they have a lot of individual groups, like the folks that left the craft world or left a cabal to join the Inari Crusade, for a better term. They're kind of like an elite force, kind of like their own little group of, they do their own thing, their own obsessions, their own craft world traits within themselves. The Vizark has his own dedicated group of incubi that follow him everywhere they go. So the thought was, when they keep saying where there's going to be a lot more elite units coming out, the thought might be this is the opportunity for Games Workshop to come out with plastic aspect warriors to replace the fine cast ones. And then you make you add this arm, use this helmet, and it's the unique Unari aspect warrior or something like that.
Yeah, I like that idea a lot because it constantly amazes me that Eldar, being one of their core races for 40K, so many of their models are 20, 25 years old or more. They desperately need a model refresh for that line. So any way they can get there, I'm all for it.
But it could be interesting. I would love to see these models come out. It would be really great to see how that comes out. But I'd also like to see maybe in variant Wraith Knights. That'd be kind of neat. There's always been conversions of Harlequin Wraith Knights. And can you imagine what an Inari Wraith Knight would look like? That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. I think kind of like what Death Watch is for the Imperium, where you can crib off a lot of the existing kits and then put out upgrade sprues. I think that's absolutely, I think you're on the right track where they could go with it. Put out those new plastic Aspect Warrior kits and then release upgrade sprues for all of the different models. So this is, you put this on there and it becomes Unari, and it adds in the glyphs or it adds an extra, whatever they decide their visual aesthetic's going to be for that. And you could really use a lot of the existing plastic kits, I think.
That's a really good idea. And it's really, I didn't think of that. So anyway, we will wait with bated breath. In the meantime, though, I do feel for Orc players and Space Wolf players. We had many of those at our tournament this past weekend, and they could just, it wasn't so bad when there's only three codexes out, but when you're the last two, you're just like, oh.
There's a lot of big difference between Index 40K and Codex 40K, and you really feel it if you don't have a codex right now.
I mean, Ray had to listen to me complain about Trukari for how many months?
Five?
And it's just rough because you're like, if, at least it felt like hours, much longer than that. But that, those little things, like I could hear, like the one of the guys who placed really well, he was playing orcs. Well, and he was saying, I would love just to have one stratagem where, yeah, I'll spend the three command points to swing again in close combat.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you just, that alone would just elevate. And it's a really a strong index. And it's just like, oh, yeah, what would an orc codex bring? So anyway, we will wait with bated breath as those come up. And of course, when those come out, we'll give you a full rundown of what we find inside that codex. So we're going to take a short break here, and then we'll get on. We had two major tournaments this past weekend. We're going to give you some in-depth coverage right after the break.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
All right, guys, and we're back. Let's go over to the pond and talk about the London GT, the second largest 40K tournament ever. It's only second to LVO. They had over, I believe it was 300 players. Gargantuan event. And for those of you who have not been to Europe, finding convention space like that in Europe is slim to none. It's very difficult to pull this sort of thing off. So my hat goes off to them. Also, any event that nearly doubles. It's one thing when like your event goes from 8 to 16. It's another thing when your event goes from 150 to 300. Lots of growing pains. It happens to the best of us, even the mighty Frontline Gaming. I went to one of their Bay Area Opens, and they found out real hard that doing a 160-person tournament with spreadsheets to do pairing doesn't work. So
yeah, we did 1 year of Midwest Conquest on spreadsheets, and then the app was out the next year, and it was just 1,000 times better.
So the London GT did do different missions and a little different scoring system and did not use the app. I'm not sure if they used their own app or what they did, or just had a very large chalkboard. I'm not sure what they used. But they were not on the Best Coast Pairings app. So we don't know all of the usual top eight. For that matter, I don't even think this was an ITC event in the end. But we do know a couple of things. They had an invitational, similar like they do at Nova. And Alex Harrison did defeat Jeff Robinson. Yes, that Jeff Robinson from the United States in the final round to take that championship. And so what we have here is they went five rounds in the larger GT, and five players ended at 5-0, undefeated. So I thought we'd go over those five lists, starting with Mike Porter. Who's Mike Porter? Well, Mike Porter is your London GT 2018 champion. So he had a very interesting list. So Mike comes in rocking an Imperium list, starting with Astra Militarum, a Vestroian detachment. He's got two company commanders, one of them with the relic of that everybody takes, the Corvus Aquila. And gave him the Grand Strategist Warlord trait. He's got three infantry squads to round out that detachment. He then follows it up with an Outrider detachment of, yes, you guessed it, Shield Captain on Dawn Eagle bike. And then unless he has the relic, and he says the Mega Jet bike. So, Kevin, you're going to have to fill us in on what that is.
So, yeah, it's the I forget the name of the relic that it is, but basically it gives your shield captain a 3-up invuln save, and it allows him to re-roll failed charges. So it makes him just an anvil.
Ouch. He then includes three units of Veritas Praetors, all with Hurricane Bolters, two units of three, one unit of eight. And then he has Velix Praetor in Alaris Terminator armor. It's filling around out the elites. And then his final detachment is a Vanguard detachment, fresh off the FAQ, with three assassins, two Evisors, one Calyxus assassin.
It's a solid list.
Yeah, it's your winning list. It's got a little bit of everything. It was a very popular list. As a matter of fact, they released some scores. No other, there were, when it came to Imperial Guard or Astra Militarum, they had three times as many detachments in all the participants than any other faction when it came. So Guard was represented in force.
Yeah, with Guard was just being so cheap to get those battalions in, like for 400 points or something, you can splash in a battalion, get heavy mortar teams or heavy bolters, and get that relic where you can get the command points back. That's any Imperium army needs that because it's just extra bodies and it's extra command points.
So going over the Adeptus Custodes, they were actually the third or fourth top faction that was used the most, in whether it be by, you know, 100% in the full army or just splashed into an Imperial army. What can we expect from what we got here? This, you know, we got Dawn Eagle Jetbike, you mentioned being the anvil. What does the rest of that detachment bring?
So, I mean, it's a ton of shooting. I'm assuming that they put Hurricane Bolters on everything.
Yes, they did.
So it's the Hurricane Bolters are rapid fire 6. And if you're within 12, each of them is 12 shots hitting on 2s. And if you're near a shield captain, you're re-rolling 1s. So it's one of the few units that Custodes have to be able to mow down hordes without being able to get into melee. And then on the melee, and this is something that I forgot when I was running Custodes this weekend, when they charge, it's strength 6 on the charge with their interceptor lance, and you get to re-roll all failed wounds in that first round of close combat. The jet bikes can fly, so they can then fall back, shoot again. They're really hard to pin down, and they hit really hard, especially that unit of 8. It's 4 attacks per bike, and then you can take extra for the Mice Cordio, so you get one extra attack for, I think, 3 or 4 points, which is strength 5. So you're still rocking really good strength, good AP. Everything does either, I think, D3 damage. So you're able to mow through a lot of things with those guys. And they're just super fast. They're super good. I can see why everyone splashed them in, at least.
Yeah. Crazy good. And although there's some really nicely painted ones, they're kind of like Necrons. They're easy to paint. So
they're very easy to paint.
Get them on the table fast. So congratulations, Mike Porter, for a winning list. We'll move on to, and I apologize because the name of this gentleman's list was actually, his name's chopped off here, but also going undefeated was an Inari list, and we were just talking about the Inari Codex. Kind of the stock list we've been seeing for quite some time. So we'll start off, it's a spearhead detachment, and it is a Cabal of the Black Heart, so Drukhari. You've got the Archon. And he's got the Labyrinth Cunning, so that allows him to regenerate command points, as well as the Writ of the Living Muse, and surrounded by 3 Ravagers with Disintegrators. So, as we talked about before, reroll 1s to hit, reroll 1s to wound. He also included 2 Razorwing Jet Bikes. I think the Razorwing, good. Razorwing Jet Fighters is what I'm trying to say, with 2 Disintegrators included in that detachment. He then follows it up with another Flyer Wing, all Alatok and all Crimson Hunter Exarchs with 2 Bright Lances and a Pulse Laser. And then he finishes it off with a Supreme Command Detachment, also Alatok. By the way, Alatok was the second most used detachment in the tournament. This one comes with a Farseer with a Witchblade with Fortune and Doom, then a Warlock Conclave with 2 Warlocks, and they knew Protect / Jinx and Quicken and Restrain. Then he has an Autok Skyrunner with pretty much a stock jet bike, but he also gave him the Laser Lance, Reaper Launcher, and the Banshee Mask, so taking advantage of those options from the index. He has a second Autok Skyrunner with the exact same thing, and then 2 dedicated transports in the form of a Wave Serpent. So the good news is, no Inari in the list.
Yeah, that's a stock, well-rounded list. Like that's the thing. Some of these factions you're starting to see as they get their codexes. Some factions have just better kind of take all comer abilities and kind of cover all bases better than some of the other factions. That's not to take anything away from the players, because obviously good players are gonna maximize good lists. But yeah, like with the list we talk about with the Imperium and the Custodes and Astra Militarum, some of the things you're able to take here, you're able to cover a lot of bases, and not have any glaring weaknesses that your opponents can exploit.
I'm going to be a little devil's advocate on this one. I agree there's a lot of hitting power in this list. I mean, there are, just that first attachment alone, there are 13 disintegrators coming at you.
Yeah.
But one thing I'm seeing here, you've got 5 of your key units, so roughly 600. You almost have 900 points locked in units that cannot hold objectives. So is this an army that thrived because of the missions they had in this particular tournament, or is this simply a good list?
True, yeah. Yeah, I don't know anything about the missions that they ran in this this tournament, so it could have been, yeah. This easily could have favored, you know, shooting and tabling your opponent over missions that were more, you know, more about objectives or other things.
So I did skip over that. I do apologize. The missions that they ran at the London GT, they basically ran book missions as primary. As then you also had the standard Maelstrom deck that you played round to round. And you combined the two scores together for your final score.
Okay, interesting.
So kind of similar to the ETC, but the ETC kind of has a modified Maelstrom deck a little bit. So yeah, so you're bouncing around, you know, draw cards. This is your objective for this turn, accumulate points. And then it's turn 6. Everybody, you know, the music stopped. Get on an objective.
Yeah, so very similar to like 5th edition, how everything was, you know, kill as much as you can and then sit on objectives at the end.
So this is something I see. Yeah, I see this like in an ITC where you have to hold multiple objectives for multiple turns. Might struggle in that format.
Yeah, cumulative scoring will not be kind to that to that list.
But not a knock against the list. Hey, if you can match against the tournament, you know, play to the packet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. So our next army comes from Tom Layton. He has indeed an Inari list. I think this is where I got the two in the list mixed up. Starts off with a spearhead detachment with a Suriani. He has Yvraine, otherwise known as the Cat Lady, as his HQ. 9 shining spears, of course, with the laser lance. And, you know, interesting, I do not see him including the Exarch. Interesting. I thought that was kind of a must-have. And then he has 3 units of Dark Reapers, 1 unit of 10, 2 units of 5. All of them have the Exarch with the Tempest Launcher. He then rounds it out with a battalion. Also, this is an Latok. Farseer Skyrunner, Warlock Skyrunner, Warlock Skyrunner, and then 5 units of Rangers, 2 units of 5 Swooping Hawks, and then 2 Wave Serpents to keep everybody safe from turn 1. So no surprises here. We all pretty much know how this list works.
Yeah.
So I guess I kind of look at it as, okay, post FAQ, I guess the list still works.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think as long as you're not, it doesn't sound like these are relying too much on like, you know, multiple units of Dark Reapers, although there's like 2, you said, you know, he's not relying on spamming those. But yeah, again, there's a lot of good options in those lists.
Puts down a lot of fire. He's got the Rangers to kind of keep you back a little bit, you know, keep you spread out the deployment zones. And if he somehow sneak through, he can always tuck and roll into the Wave Serpent. And then the Swooping Hawks allows him to strike downfield without having to move the rest of his army. So, and of course, you've got the Shining Spears, which, yeah, that very optimized unit for wreaking havoc.
Mm-hmm.
So one list that I was really happy to see go 5-0, because it's not something we've seen a lot of, is a Tyranid Gene Stealer Cult mix. So this is a spearhead detachment with Ray, help me out. This is Jormungandr. Thank you. So High Fleet Jumanji, two Neurothropes, and one of them is indeed his Warlord. He's got in the 3 heavy support slots because it's a spearhead. We said that earlier, Eric. Yep. 2 Carnifexes with heavy venom cannons, acid maw, and sporosis, and twin death spitters, and a bone mace. Good grief. That sounds brutal. If you didn't like that, he did it again, this time with 3 Carnifexes of the same loadout. And then the last set of 3 Carnifexes, he switched up 3 heavy venom cannons, but then he gave them enhanced senses and twin Death Spitters. So a little bit different at the end. He then adds in a patrol from High Fleet Kraken. I can pronounce that one. A Hive Tyrant, heavy venom cannon, adrenal glands, toxin sacks, monstrous rending claws, chameleon mutation, and a bag lunch. And then he's got two troop choices of three Ripper Swarms each. And last but not least, he's got a battalion of Gene Stealer Cult, comprised of a Magnus, a Primus, 1, 2, 3 units of 10 Neophyte hybrids, all with auto guns, auto pistols, and the all-important cultist knife. Can't leave home without it. And then there's an elite spot. He's got 20 pure strain gene stealers, is what I'm trying to say. Ray, this one's up your alley. What's going on with this list?
Well, the gene stealer cult are great because of their ability to be able to get right up close. So I'd be willing to bet he didn't even have to start out with those on the field. The Sporuses, I was actually talking to Don about them, and one of the nice things about those is they're like scouts in that you can put them high, far up in the field pretty early. And they've got a fairly close range mortal wound ranged weapon. So that's... I've never seen them in action, but they seem fairly useful. Outside of that, I would imagine it's your basic Tyranid army.
He's got a lot of big bugs, definitely on the Godzilla side of things. And then, like you said, he's got the Strike from the Shadows ability from Gene Stealer Cult. And in addition to the Spore Assist, he's got the Ripper Swarms to kind of hold down some objectives. I'm trying to figure out what the Neurothropes do. It's not that I'm just not that familiar with the Codex.
The Neurothrope?
Yeah.
It's basically like a Zoanthrope, but it's an HQ model. It's that one that it was like a sergeant, but then they turned it into an HQ.
Oh, that thing. Okay. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. All right. So I just thought it was weird he made him the Warlord and not the Hive Tyrant, but okay.
Well, you can hide the Neurothrope.
Yep. Yeah, because they're under 9 wounds. You hide them in the back with the rest of your backfield support, and you have to run through everything else to get to them.
Got it. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So, yeah, this is a pretty heavy list. I think this would definitely be a break the curve a little bit, because if you're used to fighting infantry swarms, you probably don't have enough heavy weapons to take out that many Carnifexes.
The one thing I'd say that's really good in that list is the unit of 20 pure strain gene stealers, because with Cult Ambush, a full unit of 20 will kill just about anything. I had a tournament I played last year right after beginning of 8th. I had a Lord of Skulls get surrounded and killed in one round of combat with 20 pure strain gene stealers. So they can take out just about anything.
And they have like enhanced movement in the hole, and not because I always hear. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so,
yeah, they're super good.
Well, there we have it, guys. Your top list from the London GT. Quite a bit going on Facebook about it. We're going to kind of skip that topic for this night. All I say is, watch with open ears and eyes, and be aware of people who say they were there versus people who have seen enough to think they were there. So. Yeah. But definitely some food for thought regarding some of the other eggs. And as a fellow TO, my hat goes off to you. We'll talk about our event in a second, because it was the second largest 40K event of the weekend. But it's a lot. I know how nerve-wracking it is firsthand. I actually lost 4 pounds this week just in stress. it's all those little things. So I'd probably say and Kevin, definitely jump in as you had some TO experience. But yeah. My number one advice is, if your event is a set weekend, make sure you have everything to go 40K wise the weekend before.
Because yes.
None of curveballs I got from the venue, random people asking you questions, family life getting in the way, that was unexpected. Ray got a good chuckle out of this. So we had a teacher strike in Arizona 2 weeks before the event. Good news is the strike was settled. I think the teachers are going to get what they deserve, and which is much needed. But that meant there's only 2 weeks left of school. So every after school curricular activity that was supposed to have their year end event was this week. I was in that cafeteria 3 nights this week till 9 o'clock thinking, you know how much I still have to paint? I still have to do this. I still have to do that.
Yeah.
So.
No, I agree. Like it's a big thing to TO an event, and the more people you can have to help, the better it is, but it's still a lot of work. And especially growing an event like this, like our event, Midwest Conquest, we had about 40 people the first year. We doubled to about 80 the second year, and then we're basically at that same 80 this year. Year one to two was so much work. Just anytime you grow an event like that, you have to get things you didn't even think about. Like we have to get extra tables, extra mats, extra terrain, extra place cards so that we know what table is which. You know, it's just it gets exponentially more difficult. So, one of the things that I saw on Facebook this weekend was people making fun of the terrain at the London GT. And well, yes, it sucks that the terrain was not up to par. I understand where that comes from, and my hat goes off to them, and hopefully they will learn from it, because it's hard to pull these events together, especially something that's 4 or 5 times larger than any event I've been to. So my hat's off to the TOs for that, I hope they continue to work to get improve the event year to year.
I agree, and so this is. Started off the event at Scarchurth Open with this kind of discussion and kind of the history of our event and kind of take note. So when I first moved to the area, it was very divided and competitive scene was kind of dying on the vine because the guys at the one store wouldn't go to the other store's tournaments and vice versa. And if they even showed up just to share the time and the camaraderie, they're kind of ostracized. They're sort of a secret squirrel handshake to get into the tournament. And if you didn't know it, you were already at a disadvantage. So where I lived back east, we had the luxury of several large tournaments all within 2 hours of each other. I mean, you could get to, it's like, okay, let's bring some of that pageantry to the West Coast. And knowing that I would need to get both stores, crew, for lack of a better term, to come to the event, we decided to have it on a neutral site. And Ray, correct me if I'm wrong, we had 26 our first year or something like that?
23 or 24.
Yeah, somewhere in that range. And but what shocked me is the distance people would drive. I was like, wow, okay, cool. So it gradually grew and grew and grew. We got up to the mid-40s. Last year was a complete disaster, but simply because the event was run the day 8th edition dropped. So
yep.
Why would anyone want to go to a 7th edition tournament on that day? So we barely actually we had 29 players officially, and I say that officially with air quotes, which is excellent for radio, because we actually had 5 or 6 drops the day of. And I'm like, well, dude, I've already used your dues, so you're not getting a refund, so therefore it's technically a round one drop as opposed to.
Yeah.
So that was the only reason he even counted as a GT last year. So for this year to have 49 players, super excited. We're back. We're back on the right track.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a really good turnout. Glad we used the offsite venue. We usually run our events at Imperial Outpost Games, which we still love doing. We've got several events planned, but they have a max capacity of about 44 players. So we knew we needed a bigger space for our one big event. And I think the biggest thing, though, as I mentioned before, it was meant to bring the players together from the community. For the fourth year in a row, there are more out-of-towners at our event than people from the local state, which is great because we're pulling from 5, 6 states now. But the other thing that was I would never have pulled this off. I probably would have lost more weight. And could we be honest with you, we probably would have looked as bad as some of those pictures you're seeing on the internet. But luckily, those other teams came together. They provided fat mats. They helped with setting up tables where we weren't sure if we would have enough terrain. We did, because then we could pick and choose the best terrain to be on the tables because we had such two large collections combined. And cleanup was awesome. So it was a true community event, and it wasn't like I get a lot of credit. You know, Eric, thanks for a great event. It was a true team effort, and I can't thank everyone for being such great sports. So just a lesson. So if you're like a TO like the guys in London, you don't have to do it yourself. Reach out to your community. People want to see you succeed in events like this. Ask for help.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the great things about like the Midwest tournament scene is, unfortunately, you say like, it's 2 hours to events. I drive 8 hours to local to Midwest tournaments that I consider local. And people come, you know, drive 8-10 hours to our event. And what we've started to do because of the distances and things like that is we'll sponsor tables for other events. So we'll tell the Renegade Open, bring 2 to 3 tables worth of terrain, and we'll just put like your event information all over this table.
That's a great
idea. We'll tell everyone about your event. So we're not having to provide, you know, 50 tables worth of terrain. We're able to get Iron Halo from Oklahoma and Show Me State GT, which is another one run in Kansas City, or Renegade Open from Minnesota. And if they each bring 2 or 3 tables of terrain, that makes it so much easier for us.
It's great. And I like the idea that one of the things we were talking about as well is the Nova Open in DC would kind of work with area tournaments and say, whoever wins your tournament gets a free ticket to our tournament.
So, we also do that as well. Yeah, absolutely. As part of our prize support.
So it's kind of nice. I had a winning streak of 3 straight wins for best sportsmanship. So I was like, okay, I guess I got to go to this next tournament. I wasn't planning on it.
Nice. And I will actually throw in real quick. I was at Scorched Earth last year. It was not a failure. I had a blast at the event.
Thank you. I was dismal, and I was like, okay, this is what I wanted, but it was a good learning curve, and I think I appreciate you saying that, because it was also one of those things, okay, what do we need to do differently? And so it worked out well. So hey, those who weren't there, I'll tell you what happened. So as we mentioned, large turnout. So it was GT level, not quite major level. We'll get there soon enough. But your top 8 for the Scorched Earth Open 2018, coming in 8th place from the War Room Gladiators, Ben Jurek playing Orcs. In 7th place, the Cinderella story from last year's LVO, Mark Wright, playing Blood Angels. In 6th place, George Macrodemetrius. Sorry, George, I messed up your last name. I got to play him round 1. I felt so bad because I was TOing and playing and being the ringer at the same time. All heck broke loose. I literally was like, what am I doing? Just roll dice. Okay, here we go. So people say, what do you learn from a loss? I was like, I don't even remember what happened that game. So George, I owe you one. Sorry about that. In 5th place, playing Inari, Matt Baugh from the Forge World Columbia team. 4th place, Steve Riley, one of our long distance commuters, playing Grey Knights. That's right, guys. Grey Knights came in 4th place. In 3rd place, coming all the way from Texas, William Abelez with Tau. In 2nd place, playing Drukhari. Last year's number 1 Drukhari player, Herb Schaefer, comes in 2nd, going 5-1. And your 2018 Scorched Earth Open champion is Vincent Arroyo with Alpha Legion and a whole truckload of demons in that list as well. So congratulations to all our winners in this particular event. And as mentioned, great to see everybody there. Let's talk about the winning list real quick. Pull it up here. All right, so the cowboy from hell himself, Vincent Arroyo, coming in with, as mentioned, Chaos Demons with Alpha Legion. So he starts off with a battalion of demons. It's a Chaos and Legions of Nurgle. So he starts off with the Demon Prince, Corruption, Hellforged Sword, Wings, as well as Miasma of Pestilence. And he also has Epidinas, 2 units of 3 Nurglings, and yeah, it's kind of a good size Plague Bearer squad. 28 Plague Bearers with a demonic icon. He adds to that a single unit of 8 Beasts of Nurgle, which were really coolly converted, by the way. They looked really cool. He follows that up with a second battalion. This happens to be Chaos Space Marines. This is where the Alpha Legion comes from. He has another Demon Prince, also with wings. This is his Warlord, and also has Warp Time, also Mark of Nurgle. Is another Demon Prince. This one also Mark of Nurgle. Interesting. This one, yes, he does have wings on that one as well. That's when he gives Death Hex. He has 2, 3 units of cultists. The bare one, actually two of them are the bare minimum at 10 and one large one with 26. And then finally, he has three units of three obliterators, all with the mark of Nurgle. So, gentlemen, tell me a little bit about this list.
I mean, so Alpha Legion allows him to minus one to shoot over 12 inches. So, and then there's the Tide of Traitors with cultists. So I assume that he's refreshing those cultist units. Well, I guess he can do it once now per game, but he's refreshing a cultist unit when it dies. And that's just a ton of flexibility on Deep Strike, because the Demon Prince is your obliterators. All of your demons can Deep Strike in, come in from all angles. So there's a ton of flexibility in how you deploy and how you counter deploy with this list.
One of the things I noticed with, I had a similar list with a lot of Deep Strike, and I'm wondering how, I saw him play quite a few games. I forgot to take note of this one particular thing. He might have to start the obliterators on the board. Or I know he started a lot of the Demon Princes because the power level would go up too high. You need to have half your power level on the table.
Yeah, true.
But with
the it's just still a lot of flexibility though, because you can decide which game, whether, you know, if you go first or second, whether you leave the obliterators in reserve and put the Demon Princes out or vice versa. So it's, even though you do still have to start with a lot of them on the table, that's a lot of flexibility with being able to deploy things differently.
And it's not lost on me that all that Mark of Nurgle Epidemus is just cranking up the tally. That's,
yeah.
So it's definitely,
yeah, that's a brutal combo right now.
Yeah. So definitely an army you need to beat on early so he doesn't get that tally up high.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard because, like I said, if you use the cultists and those demon princes to screen, you're minus one to hit. You can, you know, there's Chaos has stratagems that make you basically have to target the closest unit. So, you know, if you put that big block of cultists out in front to screen and you have to shoot at it at minus one, that's, you're blunting your effectiveness right at the beginning of the game.
I know we're going a little out of order, but I just want to compare and contrast because George Macadimitrius, I'm having such time with your last name, George. Sorry about that. He ran a similar style list, but very much, much more static. So let's go over his list real quick. He starts off with a battalion as well, also Mark of Nurgle. He has Epidemius and then bought a box bringer. Yeah, that's called a UPS band. Pox bringer. As well as Spoilbox Scrivener. And then he's got one unit of Nurglings. And then this is what I thought was interesting. He's got two units maxed out of Plague Bearers. So two units of 30. And then he has the Plague Drones. He's got a unit of 8. And then he follows that up with a Spearhead detachment with Chaos Lord, two Chaos Spawn, two units of Obliterators, and two Plague Burst Crawlers. Then last but not least, he grabs a fortification slot and throws in the Nurgle tree to support all that. So it's a similar idea. I got a lot of firepower. I'm trying to build up the Nurgle tally. But it's interesting where he, you know, comparing the two, his army is a lot slower. But it also, you know, get off my lawn. He kind of looks at me like, okay, make me.
Yeah. Well, so that's one of the things that I love about 8th edition. You look at the top eight here, it's eight different factions. And it, even when you have, you know, Chaos and Demons and, you know, Chaos and Demons, you still have vastly different play styles. So it's like there's so many ways to make lists viable, to make armies viable, to go through and win tournaments and, you know, win games and be competitive, but with vastly different builds. And I think that's great for the hobby.
It is. And it's something where we were talking a little bit about, you know, the good old days. You know, people say the previous apex of competitive play in 40K was 5th edition. But I kind of disagree after seeing what we're seeing in 8th, because in 5th edition, there was basically four armies you had to prepare for.
I say, as a Tau player, I vehemently disagree with that.
But back in the day, wasn't it? That was the year a third of the field brought Grey Knights to Adepticon.
Uh huh. Yeah, that was the Grey Marine year. Yeah, and the other thing too is you had that was still when you had the old release cycle of you got Grey Knights in February, and the next army release for 40K was Necrons in November. So two army releases, no FAQs. The meta like just settled and was static for 8 months, and it was fun to play. Those games were still great, but I prefer this environment so much more because it's much more dynamic right now.
It was a different time back then. Simpler time. Yeah, it was almost a little too simple. I agree with you. That was I kind of joked about my army back then, and it was basically designed to kill Grey Knights because I knew in a 3-round tournament I'm going to win at least one game.
Yeah.
Until I played Ray, and I came to Arizona. Ray was playing Grey Knights and wiped me off the table. I was not happy. Got one more list to go over real quick. Our second place finisher, Herb Schaefer. So people are wondering, what is the number one Dark Eldar playing now after defending his title in 2018? A little bit of what with the familiar and a little bit of something different. So he starts off with a Cabal of the Black Heart, two Archons. And it's funny, looks like he has a cracked screen on his phone and it like got on the pictures as he uploaded it. So it's really cool looking. It's kind of like a very gothic, you know, grim dark list. You know, it's this army builder. One, he's got the bare minimums. He's got of Cabalite Warriors, the typical three Cabalite Warriors, one blaster, one sergeant cruising around in Venoms. And then in the heavy support slot, of course, he's got the three Ravagers hanging around the Archon, taking advantage of the Warlord traits. So far, pretty lack, you know, pretty unoriginal. But then he adds the second battalion of Aletak, I believe. No, he took Sam Hain, excuse me. He's got a Farseer Skyrunner. And, sorry, I just have to scroll through this. The Incarn. And then several units of Rangers, you know, the typical three units of five. And then last but not least, he takes a third Outrider battalion. And this is the one that has Latok in it. He's got Yvrain and then the obligatory 9 Shining Spears to round out the list. And basically what Herb told me was Doom makes Drukhari great. He would just drop Doom on something and it just made the splinter weapons that much more effective to be able to reroll. And then what happens is if you can at least get that one kill, then you bring the Yvrain in. The Incarn, excuse me, wherever you need it to be. And then...
Yeah.
So, very interesting. A lot very different from what his previous playstyle was. He was originally rocking a Tantalist with... we used to call it the Party Bus because it had like three units of Trueborn all kitted out with blasters. So, a little bit different there. All right, so we're running a little low on time. We want some time to talk to our esteemed guests. We're going to take another break. And after that, get to know a little bit more about Kevin. All right, welcome back. As we mentioned, Kevin joins us from the Preferred Enemies podcast. You can catch them. Kevin, it's a weekly podcast, correct?
It's bi-weekly, and actually we try not to skip any weeks, you know, since it is bi-weekly, but we did skip we would have put an episode out this past weekend, but we were all prepping for either playing at Scorched Earth or getting ready for the Midwest Conquest. So we did skip this week. Our next episode will be recorded at the convention, and we'll try to talk with the winner. We'll try to talk to some of the players that were at the event, and then we'll get back to our regular scheduled shenanery after that.
So how would you describe the Preferred Enemies podcast to somebody who's never heard it before?
So we try to talk about news, you know, news and new releases. We do have a section of the podcast where we answer listener questions. So rules questions, list reviews, just, you know, general feedback on previous episodes, you know, where we'll go through and people send in questions, you know, how does you know, how does Epidemesis Tally work with this unit or this? And, you know, go through and talk it through it and try to like cite sources on it, basically, because we try to make the hobby as accessible to new players as possible. So whenever, you know, whenever we're explaining, answering questions or explaining lists, we try to look at it from the perspective of, okay, you know, we're trying to start. So they release, you know, the start collecting boxes for I think what was the last one they released? The Eldar one. Okay, so if you buy this, what can you make with that box? How can you get started playing this? What would you buy after this to expand that Eldar force into a 1,000-point list, or up to 1,500, or eventually up to 2,000? To kind of give, because new players coming into the hobby, it can be very daunting to get started, you know, to figure out where to go, because there's so many options. So we try to give new players kind of those guide points into how to start playing, as well as the experienced players, you know, answer questions and try to give higher level tactics for, you know, how to be competitive. You know, we've done episodes in the past about how to beat like Necron Flying Circus in when that was a thing in 5th edition. You know, what was the best way to counter that, or you know, how do you counter Dark Reapers, things like that. So we try to be a mix between new player and existing players, and we do talk about competitive stuff, but we also try to talk about the lore and kind of the non-competitive side of the hobby as well.
Now, you've mentioned the Midwest Contest, a Conquest, a few times. Tell us about that event.
So Midwest Conquest is our GT level event that we've been running. This is technically the fourth year that we've been running it, but year one doesn't really count because we had five people in the event and two of them were hosts of the podcast. So that was
around here. We call that a barbecue.
Yes, exactly. It was, we've kind of referred to it as Midwest Conquest Zero. Because we had basically two of our local players that came and played in it. Year one, we had about 40 people because we got the idea to run our event because there's a local convention in Kansas City, Conquest, which is part of how we get the name Midwest Conquest. That's a science fiction literary convention that's on there. I think this is their 49th year. And they've always wanted to have more gaming. So I got involved through another podcast that I do, Under Discussion, which is a role-playing based podcast. So we started doing games and things for them, and then we built up to how do we do more. You know, we've got one year they switched venues, and we went from having, I think, about 500 square feet of the gaming room to about 12,000 feet. And they're like, this is your space. What do you want to do with this? And we're like, 40K event. Let's do it. So working with our friends up at the Renegade Open and Iron Halo, other events in the Midwest, we've gotten a lot of players from the Frozen North Minnesota group to come down. We've gotten players to come up from Oklahoma and Texas. We've gotten a lot of players from the Kansas City and the Columbia area to come in and play at our event as well. And as you mentioned here with Phoenix, Kansas City is very similar kind of layout-wise, where it's a very sprawling city. So the people that played in one store in the southeast corner of the city would not go play north of the river because it's 20 minutes away. I'll just go play here. So there was no cross-pollination of events. So it was kind of the same thing. We wanted to build the community, and we wanted to make it so that everyone got to play in one event and come together. You know, it's been a lot of hard work, but I think it's definitely continued to grow, and hopefully we continue to make it better as we go along. So I think we're up to 85 signups for our event next weekend.
Very cool. That's actually very impressive. Congratulations, especially from drawing from such a distance like that. That's, you know, must be very rewarding. So how'd
yeah,
you
get- no, absolutely. We actually, so through the podcast, we actually got involved with David Armon and Puck from the Renegade Open, helping them like promote their event, and they come on ours to build it up. And we went up there, I think, to the second Renegade Open that they did, and we just had a blast. Rob and I went up there both got our butts kicked. You know, I think I went 1-5, and Rob, I think, went 3-3. So, but we had a blast. We enjoyed it. The other thing that was really nice is that the Renegade Open has the Renegade Mission Pack, which I love, because it does all of the things that I like about scoring in 40K. You're playing asymmetrical missions. So I pick my primary, you pick yours. We may not be playing the same game. I may be playing kill points. You may be playing objectives. So it creates interesting dynamics with how the game plays. But the trick is you get four primary missions to choose from. Once you pick one, you can't pick it again. So you have to be careful and like strategic about when you pick your primaries to use those. And then you also pick from we do modified maelstrom for the secondaries. So you wind up having an element of cumulative scoring, an element of mission scoring that you control while also trying to simultaneously deny your opponent's mission, which might not be to kill you. It may be to hold objectives. So you have to play with that as well. And I think it's we found it a really nice mission design, and we wanted to promote it, and we wanted to run events like that. So that's how we kind of draw from so far away, is a lot of people want to see those missions get played more, so they're willing to come down and drive down. It also helps that we're over Memorial Day weekend, so it's easy for people to come in and you know, drive back on Monday. But I think there's been a lot of community support for these missions to try to get more people to know about them and more people to play them.
You know, it's funny about those missions, because we've talked about them a lot on this show as well. Everybody loves them, but it's kind of like being like, no one ever runs an event with that mission pack, at least in our local area. And it's almost that kind of, well, there's a certain safety blanket of, I think the strategy of, oh, of course I'll choose kill points on this matchup. Mm. And you're like, oh, I used up my kill points for today. What am I going
to do? Yeah.
So.
It's interesting because obviously Scorched Earth decided to run the ITC Champions mission.
That was Ray's idea.
And I think they do a very similar thing. I really do like the ITC Champs missions. Only thing I don't like about them, and maybe this is just me because I've only played in twice this event and one of the previous right before LVO, there was an LVO prep event here that I played in. I find the scoring to be very complicated, and there's just a lot of things you have to remember to do. But I do like that you're playing, you get to pick, there's that element of like picking your secondaries, and you have more, it feels like you have more control about what you're doing in the game, and I like those mission designs rather than, you know, you just go to an event and you play normal ITC missions or someone's custom missions, and okay, this one's Relic or this one is, you know, roll dice and tie, and it's, those games aren't particularly fun. There's a lot more strategy in, okay, do I need to make this charge? Because if I charge and kill this unit, that's good, but I'm going to be pulled off an objective and I'm going to lose this. I think it's a lot more strategy to the game that way. And I find it much more enjoyable playing those missions.
I think the biggest thing we always hear about when we, after an event and you hear one of our friends kind of complaining, well, I got a bad matchup. Well, with these choices, you know, was it a bad matchup or did you just choose the wrong secondaries? You know? So,
yeah. Well, and the other thing I like about the Renegade missions is they influence what armies people bring. As we mentioned earlier, play to the mission, you know, play to the mission packet. If you're playing in a Renegade Open style event, and one of the things that was very popular in the end of 7th was Chaos Renegades. So people would come and they'd play Chaos Renegades and they'd have 35, 40 units because you've got five-man zombie, you know, cultists and zombies and this and this. And they would complain. They'd be like, I don't understand. I got kill points every game played against me. And I'm like, yeah, you brought 40 kill points. That's on you. You need to design an army or a list that kind of mitigates that. If you come in and you go all ham in one thing, you should be punished for that. Like that's the disadvantage for going full ham on something, you know, is you leave yourself open in other areas.
Yeah, the importance of a balanced list, and like I said, going with the playing to the mission. So, oh my god. So how'd you get into the hobby?
So, as I mentioned earlier, like I've been role playing since middle school. We started my friends and I started our Under Discussion, our RPG podcast, back in 2011, because we realized that we would show up on Friday to, you know, to play D&D or Star Wars or whatever game we were playing at the time. We realized that we'd sit around and we'd talk about role playing for like 2 hours before we'd start playing. And we're like, you know, we should just record this and like throw it up on the internet and see if people respond to it. And with Under Discussion, no, nobody really did. But that kind of led to Preferred Enemies, because Rob, you know, the other co-host for Preferred Enemies, guested on there and was talking about 40K. And then eventually they decided to go do their podcast. And just being friends with them and playing, I've always had interest in 40K. But now that I had a group of friends that played it and talked about it, I started playing more. I decided to start with Tau because I liked the tanks and like the, at the time, they, you know, the crisis suits that they had, because they didn't have the Riptides or anything else at the time. But I liked the cool, like kind of anime mech feel to the army. And I picked those up at the tail end of fourth edition. And I played a handful of games in fourth edition, all of fifth edition with my Tau. And I did not win my first game with Tau until the beginning of sixth edition. So I was 0 for 2 editions with my Tau. During that time, I picked up my Khorne. I picked up an army of Khorne Berserkers that it's kind of funny, is before it came to me, and I didn't realize this, it had kind of been the joke in our group that they were passed around a bunch. So someone bought them, started to play, didn't like painting, so he sold them to another friend. Another friend played them for a little bit, but didn't really like the way they played, so he sold them to another friend. And then that friend didn't like the hobby, so he sold them to me. So like they had like 4 or 5 owners. So like I finally got this army, and like, cool, this is the polar opposite of what Tau do, and this is really fun as well. And that kind of began my hobby ADHD of, ooh, look, new shiny new army. I need to play those, you know, because like, you know, Custodes came out. I'm like, ooh, I want those Custodes jet bikes. And now I'm looking at it. I'm like, ooh, Deathwatch looks really good.
Ray, you want to talk about your army ADD?
Oh, I'm sitting here looking at my display case where I've got like all of my painted Khorne next to like all of my unpainted Death Watch and the start of my unpainted Alpha Legion. So
it just kind of grows and it consumes you, and you just need more. So
yeah, exactly. Well, that's the disadvantage of talking about every codex and talking about every new release, is that even if it's an army that I'm not interested in, like Dark Eldar, it's just an army that I've never particularly bought it, you know, like that much. But we did our last episode talking about the new Dark Eldar Codex, and by the end of it, I'm like, you know, I could see me like picking up a start collecting box, and this is what I do. And I'm like, no, I
that's
can't.
That's how it
no,
starts.
No, no. Exactly. That's exactly how it starts.
Anyway, anything else to add before we move on to our next segment?
I got nothing.
No.
Talk a little bit about the list. You talked, mentioned that you brought to Scorched Earth Open, and what did you prepare, and how are you reacting to the FAQ?
So the FAQ didn't have a ton of impact on my list. So I brought a full Custodes list, because I prefer like pure faction armies. Like I could have brought Marines with it or whatever, but I'm like, no, if I play Custodes, I want to play Custodes. So I brought a battalion of Custodes with Trajan Valoris, my Axian Hail Forge World shield captain model, as a shield captain with a castle and axe, 3 small units of Custodes, 2 with storm shields and 1 with just guardian spears, and then a unit of Allurus Terminators, and a unit of the Veritas Praetor jet bikes, and then a Supreme Command detachment of 3 shield captains on jet bikes. The only real tweak the FAQ had was the other list I was thinking about running included 5 shield captains on jet bikes, and I was basically going to drop the Terminators and throw in and do a little, you know, shifting around and throw in some more jet bikes. But the rule of three prevented that, and honestly, that's the rule of three is a good thing. But unfortunately, because it was an army that I hadn't really had painted, I didn't get to play it much beforehand. I just was trying to get it scrambled to get it painted in the last 2 weeks before the event. So, yeah, I was basically watching Westworld and finishing painting up models right up until like a couple days before the event. So that's part of the reason why I went 1-5 is I did not get a chance to play the army very much. So I forgot things like, oh, yeah, I get to reroll to hit wounds in close combat.
Little things like that. So
yeah, you know.
Anyway, so you and I got a game in. It was kind of funny. I didn't even know what round it was.
So round 5. Yeah.
But I thought we were round 4, and you're setting up the objectives. And I'm like, what's he doing? There's only 2 objectives. Like, oh, round 5. Sorry, I'm looking at the wrong mission.
Oh, no, I know. It's easy to get lost as a TO. There's so many things you're trying to track.
It's just like little things. And it all worked out well. And I'm a big proponent of, you know, keep the show on, keep the behind-the-scenes stuff behind the scenes. And
sure.
So I was definitely distracted. One of the biggest distractions, of course, was it wasn't until Friday night, I think. I can't remember, Ray, it was you or Don reached out to me and said, so what army are you bringing? And I'm like, army? Oh, God, there's like a 50-50 chance I'm playing. That's right. If we have an odd number of players, I'm the ringer. So at this point, you know, even though I've been playing Drakari since, what, 6th edition now? I've been playing competitively.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
The FAQ actually did not hurt me at all. Actually, I've always tried to – actually, it helps me a lot. So I've always tried to do my deep strikes on turn 2 or turn 3 because I get maximized the power from pain. And usually the only thing that kept me from not doing that is because my opponent was just beating me up too much on turn 1. It's just, I got to put some models down. I'm going to get tabled. And so they're kind of in shambles because when the Codex came out, although it's super powerful, I had, you know, the mishmash. And so they have separate detachments. I still have a lot of new elements to put together to make sure I have clean detachments. And so the quick thing was my Chaos Army was still in the display board from our last tournament. So I'll just take that. I'm good.
So what unit?
And then I show. Go ahead. So yeah, so I'm like, I'm good to go. You know, we did really well at the team tournament with it. I should be fine. And I'm setting up for my first game and I go, oh, wait a minute. Half my power level needs to be on the table. Uh-oh. So now I'm like trying to reconfigure the list like on the fly. I'm like, and of course, you know, some smart Alex, like, all you had to do was add an extra cultist. I'm like, well, I can't do that after the game started. Come on.
Right.
So I'm trying to figure out how to use the army on the fly at the same thing. So anyway, long story short, I don't think that's the only part of the beta, beta rules that really is just messing up that list. And but I was really surprised when I'm going up against Custodes. It's the first time I really played against a full Custodes army. I played, you know, a couple guys that just have like the, you know, the token detachment. And the first thing I thought of was because Kevin, you took Death by 1,000 Cuts. And at first I was like, what does he know that I not know? Or is he just being arrogant? And sure enough, turn 1, turn 2, you were popping 3 units with ease. And probably would have done it turn 5 if I hadn't had that real lucky roll. And I was just, wow, they pack a punch for so few models on the table.
Yeah, the one thing that's amazing is like that 3-man unit of Terminators, which is great because they're able to deep strike without using the stratagem. And then there's a separate stratagem. So the one downside for Custodes is that they have about 30 great stratagems. So it's like it's really hard to pick and be like, which one do I want to use? Do I save the command points for this, but I want to use this? But with the Terminators, there's that one Unleash the Lions, 2 command points. You split that unit of Terminators into individual 1-man units, and then each of those will go and murder a unit by themselves. Like I killed in all the other games because I played like 4 Imperium lists. Those Terminators would go and they would just murder a attack squad by themselves, you know? And so the ability to just break them up and they're two up, four up with four wounds. So unless you're really throwing a lot of dedicated wounds at them or dedicated heavy weapons at them, they're going to survive to get there. And they just, they hit like a truck. It's just that once you start failing saves, you have so few models that it starts to crumble. And, you know, it's really hard to, in cumulative games especially, it's really hard to keep that tally going and just break through and finish people off. But I had a lot of fun playing the list. Every game I played was close. I just came up a little bit short in every game.
Yeah, I was, when you said you were 1-5, it didn't click at all. That I mean, our game was tied, I believe, turn 4, turn 5. I mean, it was tied all the way through. So absolutely, it's a very interesting list. Very, you know, and like I said, my first foray into fighting Custodes, and I was like, oh, I get it now. Oh boy.
Yeah. Now they're an elite army done correctly, and I can definitely see in certain mission designs where like it's killy, where it's more focused on just killing units, I could see them being really, really strong. And the other part of it too is that people that are, you know, as people play them more and just get used to the tricks and stuff they have, you're going to see them pop up more and more and less, you know, in tournaments, because they are super powerful. But they don't have like the built-in, like with Dark Eldar. Dark Eldar players, every Dark Eldar player I've ever known that plays Dark Eldar has played Dark Eldar from the beginning. So they've played him through the Dark Ages of, you know, the old fourth edition models, through, you know, the like 2 years before they got a new codex, and then the good times of all of this, and then the, you know, seventh edition. So they know that army inside and out. So when the army gets good, there's a ton of players that just know what to do. I think as Custodes build up and you get more of that, I think you're going to start seeing them pop up more on top tables.
Definitely something to see here. So yeah, as a meta evolves, I mean, it's definitely one of those. Remember when Ray and I talked about that codex coming out? We're like, this is kind of left field, really. It's Custodes codex.
Yeah. They play so much different than anything else. It's funny, the army they play closest to that I from playing them, you know, the six games, they play very similar to my Khorne Demonkin with how they played, because they're very fast, they're very assault focused, and you know, you want to close gaps and you want to get into melee as quick as possible.
So it was a great game, and glad you had a good time at the tournament. So.
Yeah, it was a great event. It was a lot of fun.
So much. All right, after the break, we'll go over our ITC top 10 as well as upcoming ITC events for next weekend. All right, welcome back. We have a lot of new movement here in our ITC top 10 from last week. Key thing that has changed is all of our top 10 ITC players currently have their full five events. So this is where the jockeying for position becomes extremely tight, and it just comes to who can excel under the highest pressure at the biggest stage. So with no further ado, let's look at our top 10. Coming in 10th place, Anthony Bellum. He is 187 points off the lead. Jessica Bowman, just a mere 3 points ahead of Anthony in 9th place. With a slightly larger lead, 7 points, is Andrew Ford, just edging out Jessica Bowman for 8th place. In 7th place, hey, friend of the show, Don Husen. That's right. Yay, Mr. Deathguard himself. He's got his five events in. He's 171 points off the lead. Mere 10 points ahead of him is Ryan Olson, hanging in there in 6th place. And then all of a sudden, the standings make a huge chasm. Bruce Merker comes in 5th place, and he's got a full 18-point lead over Ryan Olson, the biggest lead from one position to the next. And then it gets real tight once again. Captain Hellhound Mitch Pelham himself at 136 points behind the leader. TG Lanigan's got a 1-point lead over Mitch Pelham for 3rd place. And in 2nd place, 68 points off the lead, is Joshua Death. Which means for the first time in 9 weeks, we have a new leader on the ITC top 10, and that is Matt Root, he is in first place, finally taking over the top spot. Your 2018 Adepticon champion. He's got 691 points with 5 events under his belt. So that is your ITC top 10 for this week. Ray, what events do we have coming up next week?
So we've got the Throne of War GT at the Armchair Adventurer in Honolulu, Hawaii. The Burning Couch at Four Horsemen Comics and Games in Morgantown, West Virginia. And then we have the Midwest Conquest GT at UnderCon 2018 in Missouri.
Yep, Kansas City, Missouri.
It's okay.
And it's actually funny. We've got 2 of the top 10 players registered for it. Matt Root and Ryan Olson are both in the event. And I know that like Trent Northington and a few other people that are like just outside of the top 10 are also registered to show up at the event. So
you know,
it's going to be a good event.
A little bit of trivia. Oh, Trent Northington was my pick to win the LVO. He had the most wins after round 3 among the ITC top 10 going to LVO last year. So I expect big things out of you, Trent, this weekend. So.
Well, Matt Root, as you mentioned, he won to go top of the list. He won at Spring Conflagration in Minneapolis, which is a Midwest Conquest prep event. So the list that he won using that, he's bringing to Midwest Conquest. So I expect him to do really well as well. And Matt and Trent are both really great guys. So it'll be a fun event.
So. Just had a quick shot. Whoever thought of the name of the Burning Couch G? That is an awesome name.
That is
guys,
great.
We want to have you on the show. We want to hear about this. I'm trying to picture. What did that? What, there's got to be a story behind that name. So, can't wait to hear it. So anyway, Kevin, thank you so much for being on the show. Where can we find the Preferred Enemies podcast?
You can find us at preferredenemies.com, on Facebook at Preferred Enemies, or on Twitter at Preferred Enemy, because Twitter was being weird when we signed up. You can find us on iTunes, Facebook, and we appreciate it if anybody wants to give us a listen. Any feedback, you can send questions in. The information to send email addresses is all on the Preferred Enemies website. We answer questions, list reviews, all types of things.
And if you still want to buy tickets for the Midwest Conquest, where do they go for that?
Go to midwestconquest.com. We have up to 90 spaces, so we've got roughly 5 spots open. The ticket is $60 at this point, and we'd love for anybody that wants to come to be able to show up.
All right. Well, it was a great honor having you on the show. Appreciate you coming out.
Thank you very much.
Ray and I will be back next week. So again, I'm your host, Eric.
I'm Raymond.
Thank you, Kevin. And we'll talk to you guys next week.